Ich werde kurz anfangen.
Wait, sorry. Let me first introduce you, perhaps. Okay, so our next guests are from the ETH Zurich. We have Art Clay, Professor Jörg Gutknecht. We have Roland, whose last name I don't know right now. And, sorry?
Roland
Dahin. Roland Dahin, okay. And Ulla? Ulla Glavich, okay. Reporting on the Going Public software. This is a subject which is a bit apart from our conference because it is not running under Linux, but under a operating system called Bluebottle, which I haven't heard of until recently. But I think it will be very interesting. And Art will start with a few explanations about the demo that we are seeing first. And after that, we'll be seeing the presentation by the professor.
So just very shortly, the paper is called Unbounded AOS and the Going Public Software. So in the paper, you'll read much about how the software functions on a musical, artistic basis. But today, we're going to do more AOS and system demonstration so you can get a from bottom-up view of the whole system here. Okay, it's like Linux, it's an open source system, and the software is also available on the web page given in the bibliography of the paper. It's very shortly, Roland Dahinden is a collaborator since 2 years with this project. The goal is to use collaborative scoring where more composers can add scores into the library of this device. It runs completely without, it's a wearable computer without any connections. We're doing this so at least you can see what he sees in the eyepiece. So it's basically a score synthesis program which works on a sensor network that, depending on how his movements are outside with GPS and the three-dimensional compass, he can control the contents of the score. And what you see basically is a whole system of how to do that here. These are called behavioral icons. Dependent on his amount of movement, the computer program will make suggestions whether he should go faster, move less, or more, so that when you have an ensemble, there's what we can say a general tempo between the people, because basically they're in the city playing and they have a route going through. But we have to keep them in time so that the three scores are some way synchronized, and we do that through these behavioral icons, so that everybody stays on, so to speak, so many meters per second through their routes. So very simple, you've seen that the computers has run about 20 minutes. It's got batteries for about 30, so let's hope it works. Okay, it's very sensitive because there's a lot of Bluetooth things and things like that, which like power. So going from the icon menu here, we have the score. You can recognize this John Cage variations, and we're making variations of his variations. So there's four pictures, one for north, one for south, one for west, and one for east. And they combine depending on his rotations. Roland, could you spin around a bit? Of course, it happened, it just died. But Sven, this is what we thought would happen. So anyway, depending on his movement, he has directional scoring. So this page, this page, this page, this page, and the distortions happen on the pitch and tilt level. Okay, so that was the score in the middle, and then you had these lines here, and it's a matrix. It's a modulating matrix which divides the picture into basically rhythm or time and frequency parameters. Okay, and then going on the bottom, you have a kind of curve of how his movements were, so you can see on a general level how much time he's been taking and as though an average of his activities. And then below, you would have a GPS indicator because the musicians need to know whether the satellite signal is strong or weak. So they can say, stay out of the trees, stay out of the buildings, and so they can have control. When it's red, it's out, and then when it's really gone, what happens is that the software switches to a GPA simulator where the routes are pre-programmed in, and it goes just simply right into the automatic one. So it's for inside-outside situation, because if they go from outside into the building, the GPS simulator will switch on, and they can continue playing the score. Okay? So basically, you're seeing the first introduction to AOS. And Bluebottle. And when it comes up, I guess Roland will do a little dance. So just make sure. Outside of the score, which the musicians are seeing in their eye, what we've done is we've created a kind of a choreography of movements which they can do. and through this movement of coupled movements, when they join each other really physically and they rotate, we can control the change of the scores exactly at the same time, because a rotation takes place of all three musicians. And exploring this kind of choreography has brought about a really interesting performance situation in space, because the whole thing, the changes of the score based on movement, and we lock the movements through choreography, we have very sort of tutti effects, which are very hard to get in this kind of stochastic situation. So maybe you want to start, and when it comes.
Yeah. Oh, it's coming up.
Okay, well, who knows?
Yeah. Okay.
Concerning the questions, we'll be also in the pause here, so we won't get any questions, so that we have a little bit more time to talk about the system, because it's a dense matter. So. Okay. Professor Goodman?
Uh-huh. Okay. Shall I start anytime? Yeah, you want to start now?
No, start when it happens. Change of compass.
Is it running now?
This compass is not running.
Okay. So in that case, let me start in the meantime. And okay, go to, give us a time. I need the laser pointer. Okay, good afternoon. It's a very big pleasure for me to be here, and to explain what Blue Bottle is, but I mean at least to make you aware of its existence, maybe. To be honest, I feel a little bit like the odd man out there, because I'm definitely not a Linux person. And beyond being open source, there is not much in common between what I'm talking about and Linux. But let's start. Open source is definitely one of our goals with Blue Bottle and all the other systems that we have developed. Let me quickly give a small overview of the ETH system building history. It all began in 1970 with Pascal. You might still know that language quite well. And what you probably don't know is that in the 80s, 90s, and 2000, there were sort of other projects being pursued at our institute. One of the more well-known ones was the Lilith project with Modular 2. Lilith was one of the first European mouse/bitmap computer that was sort of working in productive sense. In the 90s, there was what we call Oberon as a successor to Modular 2 and Pascal as a language. And now what I'm talking about today is the evolution of Oberon. It's called Active Oberon, and it comes as a language plus a runtime system. It's working actually on Intel SMPs, multiprocessor kernels, and also on strong arms. This is an example of a strong arm implementation of Blue Bottle, or AOS if you want, which is being used mainly for a project with wearables and other, let's say, more modern projects. What was the motivation? What is the motivation for us to go open source, if you want? Basically, there are two big motivations. One is education. Of course, we need to educate our students to get competence in system building, and to get competence in understanding of how systems are working from the ground up, or all the way down to the ground, if you want. And another reason, of course, a no less important reason, is to build our own playground for research and development. This is, in particular for me, a huge motivation for developing systems like this. And maybe in contrast to non-educational systems, we need some qualities that are maybe less important for purely commercial systems. I try to enumerate all these qualities here. One is understandability. This is a very big very important quality that allows us to teach the system, not only to understand, but actually to teach, is a precondition of teachability. And then, of course, as you just saw, as I just mentioned, we want to be able to port our systems to an arbitrary, suitable hardware platform. And what is also very important, what is maybe more pronounced in our system than it is in Linux, is what I would call malleability. I mean, the idea of software to be able to adapt the software from the ground up to a certain use, certain kind of usage. Of course, reliability, verifiability, and publishability are three important qualities to make these systems acceptable for non-toy applications as well. And publishability, of course, we need to publish in universities a lot more than ever. And so we are also very much heading for publishable systems, which of course is beneficial for teaching as well. Okay. Now, what are the principles? Main principles. There is actually one principle that basically our group, our team is famous for, and this is simplicity, to make things as simple as possible. Also, conceptual uniformity is very important, and guaranteed consistency, which might be a big difference, maybe a big difference when compared to Linux, where you don't have, things like strong typing, you don't have one language, maybe, and maybe you also don't have consistent level of abstraction. So these are the principles of approach that we have taken very seriously and very importantly in our development. More and more, I think today, people are going back to virtues like compile time checking, runtime checking, without having to employ, sophisticated model checkers. Modularity is also a very old virtue, and it has become modern again. Separation of concerns. Of course, you have today you have object-oriented patterns which are somehow taking over these qualities, but at a substantial cost. Then we also put big emphasis on explicit interfaces that are cleanly separated from implementation, and we also strive for as much abstraction as possible. So in our case, it's not so important to be able to actually look at the source code as it might be in Linux. It's actually more important to understand the compositional model underneath, and to be able to follow the compositional model and to build on this model, to build your own applications on that model, which is it's a shift of emphasis, if you want. So I would say, even though the source code is available from the very bottom up, all the source code, including the kernel, is available, it's not that important to be able to study that code and to understand that code. It's much more important to be able to understand the abstractions that are implemented by this code. And a more banal but nevertheless a very important principle is that the implementations are never used for building up your own components. It's always only the interface, which is ideally very thin. Okay. Yeah. Okay, yes, it's a pleasure to... No, it's fine. Whenever it's ready, whether you're ready, then basically we should switch, and then I come back in a minute. Yeah, okay. Okay, in the second part of my talk, I would like to do a quick tour d'horizon through the systems principles, and in particular, talking about those principles that are different from what you might know from Linux. Okay, so first of all, as I already said, we have a static hierarchy of modules, so the system can be looked at as a hierarchy of modules, each module having its own explicit interface, and all the implementation stuff actually hiding behind the interface, or being encapsulated behind the interface. So if you want to get a rough and abstract view of the system, then you just basically take the hierarchy of modules and look at the interfaces, and then you, in an ideal situation, then you would know what the system is like without having to scrutinize the code behind. Very important, there is a single address space, so we don't have multiple address spaces that are protected from each other. We have a fully managed single address space, and fully managed in the sense there is a system-wide memory manager, a system-wide garbage collector that takes care of the whole address space. It takes care of the consistency of the whole address space, so there won't be any corruption. The corruptions are still strictly impossible. There is a view of the system, which is a bit different from the static view I just talked about, as an operating environment for typed objects, if you want. So the whole system is a kind of a living ground for a collection of interoperating typed objects, and they come in two flavors. There are active objects, which is a bit kind of a newer model. Active objects meaning that they are objects with encapsulated behavior, and there can still be passive objects. I mean, they're not the ones that you know that represent basically shared resources, I mean shared by the active object, if you want. And then we also have a very pronounced, very extensive plugin service architecture with all sorts of virtual services, like, I mean, virtual device drivers, virtual file systems, virtual stream system, virtual connection system, and so on and so forth. So this is another example of our abstract of our strive for an abstract representation of the system. To get through the idea of what an active object is, you might quickly look at this well-known concurrency example. I mean, you have two rocks here, North Rock and the South Rock, and you have a population of monkeys that have to eat on the South Rock and to drink on the North Rock. And of course, every once in a while the monkeys have to cross the rope, and the rope is, in that case, it's kind of a shared resource. So that's what you see here. I mean, the rope is, in that case, it's a module, so it's actually a one-instant singleton object in the system, and it takes the role of a shared resource. I mean, it's a shared resource for all the monkeys, but in our model, it's an object. It's a system-wide object. It comes with a method claim. I mean, for a monkey to get access to the, or to cross the rope, so it can call that method here and indicate the direction. Whereas the monkeys, they come as objects, and they come as active objects. As you can see here, the object program has a main body, and the main body basically tells the story of life for the different monkeys. So as you can see here, so the whole life story of a monkey is drinking for a certain time, then claiming the rope to cross it, then to eat a certain time, then claiming the rope to cross again, then to drink again, and so on. So this tells the whole story of a monkey, of the life of a monkey. And of course, in behind the scenes, it runs as a separate thread here. So that this each object represents a separate thread as well. But it doesn't only represent the thread, it represents a combination of an object, I mean something that you can call, that you can use, that you can talk with, and an activity, an encapsulated activity that tells the story of that object. Okay, this is in from the frog perspective, it looks like this, of course. I mean, if you have several CPUs, I said the system is actually targeted towards SMPs very very pronouncedly. So here you can see that basically the idea is that every processor, every CPU runs an object, runs such an active object. Of course, there might be active objects that are not runnable, that would be runnable at the moment, but they don't get the processor, so they are queued up here in the ready list. Okay, then Blue Bottle is basically a shell, if you want. AOS is the active object system, it's the kernel, if you want. And Blue Bottle is basically a shell, and that comes with new abstractions, abstract data types, like text, very powerful text system. We have some, 80,000 Chinese characters that we can represent in high quality. So text is a very elaborate data type here in the system. We have streams, we have very generic streams that we can couple with basically all of the devices. We have things like decoders, I come to that in a second, and so on and so forth. But more important is that we also have compositional frameworks. Our system is, if you want, a component system that presents itself as a kind of a compositional kit that you can use, where you can build on, you can reuse the different components, but of course you have to know how it works. You have to know the model. That's much more important than the actual code behind here. So this example shows again the difference between interface and implementations. It's a bit sophisticated, so for those of you who are aware or who know how difficult the multi-threaded QE programming is, they might appreciate what's shown here. From the outside, it looks like, this is a form window, so it's a kind of a root GUI object. And from the outside, of course, it looks as just an ordinary object that you call a method, like method X. And as a client, you just call this method X, and you don't care about the internals. But in fact, the internals, because this form window is, again, an active object, in fact, behind the scenes, the method is only executed directly if it's coming from this own intrinsic activity. It's actually queued up. If not, it's queued up in the request queue and worked off later by the object itself. In this way, we can avoid, races between different threads accessing the GUI object. But the clients don't have to be aware of all that internal multi-threaded mechanism. It's purely shielded from the application, from the client. Okay? And this is a last quick example, which might be more suitable for our current event here. It shows how a decoder and player framework is implemented in the system. So first of all, there are predefined data types or classes, if you want, like decoder, channel, device, and so on. And what you have to do as a programmer, if you want to implement a new player, like an MP3 player, which is our example here, then you basically have to provide a player. This is a player here, and of course the player has to make use, and I'm emphasizing it again, it has to make use, abstract use of all the components, like the decoder and channel components, and block components, device components, which basically is the driver. This is the device driver here, and to compose, your actual player here. And also, of course, you need to feed the decoder, and this is done by using a stream. And in the end, what our framework allows here is to have multiple channels, and then it allows the device basically to mix the channels, the different channels to one. These are more or less logical channels that can be mixed to an arbitrary number of, let's say, physical channels. I don't know, 2 or 5 or wherever. So this is another mapping that is not shown here. Okay. So and this is a sketch of how our MP3 player would look like. First of all, there is this constructor here, if you want. This constructor constructs the active object. The object is again active, and you can see how it works here, basically. So while the decoder still has data, it takes, actually the pool here, this block pool acts as a kind of a controller that prevents the player to decode everything in advance. So it decodes a certain number of blocks, and then it blocks actually when when wanting to take another block, it actually blocks and gives the device a chance to play, so that there it doesn't just, I mean, preventatively decode everything, because that block pool here is limited in size. So basically, this pool.remove, these blocks, if there is no block anymore in the pool, so the activity here blocks at this point, if this is the case. But if not, if there is a block, then the decoder is immediately fed with that block, and the channel is requested to basically queue the block in order to provide it for the device to mix. Okay, so this is basically what's drawn here inside that diagram. And while there is still data, I mean, all that happens again. So again, this is the life story of the player object, and if everything is finished, then the channel is going to close here. Okay? And the initializer, I mean, the constructor, has to construct all that stuff that is part of the player, that is in the state space of the player, and how that works, I mean, roughly, of course, very roughly, you can see here, I mean, it takes from the module AOS codecs, it takes an audio decoder, in that case an MP3 decoder, which has to be provided, of course, already. And this is, and then it takes a default device, it creates the pool, and so on. So it sets up all that stuff, but it doesn't have to do it on its own. Basically, it just reuses existing stuff, components, if you want. Okay. Good. Now, what implementations do we have? We already mentioned the Intel Pentium, which for our case is, let's say, the most important, most interesting one, because this is where the complexity comes in. If you have multiple cores or multiple processors that have to be used, this is where our main platform, and you will be seeing a demo in a minute, exactly on such a Pentium system. There is also, for the more wearable projects, there is also a strong arm and Intel scale implementation. And what is, I mean, an important aspect of the whole development is, and this is also another contrast to Linux. I mean, Linux is still, a rather heavyweight system. I mean, there is this metaphor of, I mean, multi-user system behind, or multi-user scenario behind, and it has never ever really freed itself from that rather heavyweight, background scenario. Whereas in our case, I mean, our kernel is, I mean, much, much more lightweight, and it's much more sort of able to be application aware. I mean, you can change it much more. I mean, still today in Linux, I was told there is still only Linus Torvalds who does the changes on the kernel. There is no other people in the world who do the changes in the kernel. In our case, I mean, everybody basically, every student who is interested can make the kernel application aware. For example, in the case of the going public implementation that had to be done in certain respects. Okay, so even the kernel is much more malleable in our case. So what kind of applications do we have? It's actually much more experimental applications like multimedia implementations. For example, here you see new media implementations. We have actually three projects already pursued with AOS. And I should mention at this point as a side remark that I look at this as a proof of concept. I mean, for me, this kind of projects is not, I mean, it's not, for, I mean, it's art, responsibility, it's other people's responsibility. It's not my responsibility, I mean, to defend the contents of the applications. What my role is basically to attract people with interesting ideas and to provide them with, I mean, a reasonably lightweight, reasonably powerful, reasonably lean kernel that allows them to do what they finally want to do. So for me, it's much more a proof of concept. I mean, in addition to the paper that we write, it's basically a live proof of concept, and I can tell you that, I mean, these three examples, I mean, the motion tracking in a Butoh dance performance, the going public demo that you just saw, and also a multi-screen performance with non-linear storytelling. I mean, they were really very ambitious, and they really put the system to its limits. Okay, so these are the new media, let's say, applications that we have. We also have, I mean, let's say more serious ones like telemedical wearable applications where the device is monitoring a patient's or a person's heart activity, for example. We also have a very new project that we just submitted about neurofeedback in real time. And then we also have a Europro project about the topic of proactive safety system sensing during flights, I mean, for general aviation. So there are other projects as well that are all done with AOS/Bluebottle behind or inside, if you want, but many of them have, let's say, a little varied, even kernel or at least shell, in order to optimally satisfy their needs. Okay, so what you see next is a demo on the PC by Ulrike Glavic, who helps me developing the system and maintaining the system further. You just saw the going public demo, so these are the two highlights for today here. Let me still make the conclusion here. Well, my point is, my attitude is that open source, I mean, it's obvious it's needed. I mean, everything else is almost ridiculous. I mean, it's clearly, I mean, in our case, it is no discussion. I mean, students need to see the code. Students need to see how it really works, all the way down to the floor, if you want. But more important is to try and experiment with abstractions that are useful to be used for implementing more efficiently and more quickly and more effectively non-trivial demanding applications. So these, basically, this second point is, I would say it's about, I don't know, 3/4 of the weight, and open source is only 1/4 of the weight. And here you can see an overview. I mean, this is my personal view. I have not done an investigation, but my personal view is that, I mean, interfaces, they are used, they are needed. I mean, you need clear interfaces, not just header files, really interfaces. You need abstract data types, you need abstract frameworks. These are the things that help you develop your application, your software more efficiently, more effectively, and more reliably. You also need good code, at least in a university environment, because students want to study good code. Good engineers want to study good code, okay? But all the other code, the bad code, the weird code, I mean the confusing code, it might still be useful, but more for automated reuse. I mean, like compilers need to be able to compile it again, debuggers, builders, I mean, checkers, model checkers, translators, interpreters, all these programs. And they should actually, I mean, bad code should be restricted to be fed to this kind of users, and should be, I mean, held back from students. So, well, yeah, I mean, this is my personal consequence and conclusion of, let's say, the open source, yeah? Okay, now let's turn to Ulrike. Quick demo again, I mean, just ad hoc.
I hope I can. You can understand me. So this is the desktop as it shows up when the system starts. I put some animation in the background to make it a little more interesting. AOS and Bluebottle gives you the impression that the desktop is infinite. So we call it a zooming user interface, as you see in a minute or in a second. So you can zoom very far in, and then I think you can also zoom.
I mean, this means that we also experimented with GUIs and user interface. This is one of the applications of our
just got lost a little bit. Okay, and then you come back again. And you can also zoom out as you want. Exactly. Those zooming operations are very fast, so we used extra vector instruction to speed up the zooming and to make this desktop very fast. And the operation.
There is no special graphics hardware behind. So that was our principle. Only use the SSE2 instructions. I mean, nothing vector instructions, but no special hardware.
Yes, then you can switch between the parts of your screen, up and down. And
you
we
can
have.
Also see there is transparency.
And we have different forms of look and feel. Here you see these different menus to control the desktop. You can also switch between the different looks and feels. So you can have almost no look and feel, a very basic look and feel. Then we have some conservative ones.
By the way, the first screen was developed by Stein, by professional designer.
Exactly. We have very fancy Christmas skin with snows and and then
right.
Some more professional ones. So you can switch between those as you like and select the one that is your favorite. Here again we have one with this turnable menus and goes back to the Stein interface.
Can you show the Chinese characters?
Yes, we can. Here we have, I don't know, some student or someone in China translated a book. It's an Oberon 2 book, and the introduction was translated into Chinese. And here we can see our high resolution Chinese fonts. So this. And
so
we can
also.
And we can also use different kinds of fonts in our programs. So this is a program, a Hello World program that writes Hello World in different languages. And you can also just put these characters into your program or use different editors, I don't know, input method editors to type Chinese, Cyrillic, or Unicode. So this is also possible with our system.
You can show the object tracker.
You can show the object tracker. The object tracker.
So there's also introspection or reflection if you want.
And this gives you a list of all the active objects in the system. There are quite a few, but these are light in not heavyweight processes, but rather lightweight processes. And of course, behind every GUI application, a thread is hidden. That you then see on the object tracker. So
can you show some media?
Yes. I can play you. First, I want to play you. I play you an MP3 file. MP3. That shows you that the MP3 player actually really works. We can play. Can stop that again.
Is that a movie?
Yes. concurrently. And the AOS is able to handle all this. The compiler,
simple IDE,
compiles very fast. Yeah. Just in a minute it's done, or in less than a second it's done.
What?
It's just by clicking.
Did it compile?
Yeah.
You cannot
so fast.
Yeah, I just missed it. Yeah.
So I can show it again. Yeah, it goes very fast.
Yeah, there would be much more to show, but I think that gives you some, rough idea of what the system is, and you may at least get an idea that this is not a toy. I mean, it's a serious system that dozens of our students are inspecting, upgrading, changing, using, studying, and so on and so forth. Okay, so I think this rounds our performance up now, and I would like to thank you for your attention. And if there is a question or whatever, then we are still available. But I think that the planning is now that we have a break. Okay, yeah, thank you anyway, and hope you enjoy the show.
So then our next talk then will be at 3 p.m. Lee Revell on the kernel 2.6 versus Linux.
Sie ist ja bequem, um rüber zu gucken auf dem Monitor.
Ja, ich habe es nicht so gut gesehen.
Ja,
das ist
ja doch zum Glück noch. Ja,
das hat zum Glück noch geklappt, sonst hätten Sie dort
sitzen. Aber ich habe genau schlecht gesehen.
Ja, das ist
ein Schnitt. Ja, wäre jetzt ein TFT noch fataler gewesen, wollen gar nicht schlecht.